listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101 FM. Recently, we've had the feds coming back against activists and the like, using the grand jury, sort of a classic process of using the grand jury as a means of intimidation against political activists. Today, we've got a San Diego activist on the line. This is Matt. We've got Bradley here in the station as well.
Hello.
Just checking.
Hey, how you doing?
Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what's going on in your world. I guess a little bit about who you are.
Sure. So my name is Michael Cardenas, and I'm an organizer here in San Diego. And right now I do a lot of work with Indie Media and with Radioactive Radio and with the Organa Collective. So I mostly work on like independent journalism and human rights for migrant people nowadays. And I've been doing some organizing here in San Diego for a long time, a couple of years now. I don't know if it's a long time, but a couple of years. I guess what the grand jury is around is a series of events that happened in 2003 called Revolution Summer. Revolution Summer was a summer-long campaign to like bring issues to the attention of people that were spending a lot of time in the anti-war movement in the hopes that they would get involved in new other issues as energy around the anti-war movement was waning.
Mm-hmm.
So every week or every other week we did a different topic with a teach-in and a protest and covered stuff like sweatshops and feminism and animal liberation, earth liberation and whatnot. Towards the end of the summer, one of the events that we did was some organizers had brought Rod Coronado here to San Diego to give a speech on his ideas around Earth liberation. Right around that time, I think it was the day before or a few days before, there was a large action that was claimed by the ELF here in San Diego, which was a fire of an apartment complex. It was a very large 200-unit apartment building that was under construction, and it was basically all wood at the time, up in La Jolla, which is a very wealthy area of San Diego. And the whole thing was burnt down. Soon after that, just a few weeks after that, this campaign of like federal law enforcement harassment of activists started, where they raided the homes of numerous people here in San Diego, specifically two people, myself and another person who had videotaped Rod Coronado's speech. And so they raided our houses. In one case, the other person whose house they raided was totally non-compliant, and they basically went through all of his stuff, all of his house. They took computers from him. They took his video camera. They took, like, boxes and boxes of literature and pins and everything that they could. In my case, some of my roommates were not so inclined to have the FBI tear up our house. We already knew about what happened at his house, so we said, you know, one of my roommates said, well, what are you looking for? And they said, a videotape. And they said, well, the videotape that you're looking for is right there. And so they gave it up pretty quickly.
They were going to get it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So then what's happened in the last few weeks, just a few days ago, I guess last week, Thursday, the FBI started going to people's homes and workplaces and places where activists hang out. Like there's a house that Activist San Diego owns. And giving out subpoenas to people for a federal grand jury. I guess this is going on all over the country, San Francisco, New Jersey, Wisconsin, Los Angeles, around different cases, but all federal grand jury subpoenas around earth liberation, animal liberation issues. Yeah, so at this point there have been like 10 to 12 people subpoenaed in San Diego.
And how many of them have had to appear at this point? Have they had to go before the grand jury at this point?
Yes. In reading, you know, when I got the subpoena, I immediately started, like, trying to learn something about grand juries.
Mm-hmm.
And Ward Churchill's book, Agents of Repression, he talks about COINTELPRO. He talks a lot about grand juries and how throughout history, grand juries have been used to disrupt movements like the American Indian Movement. And this tactic that they use is to specifically target two kinds of people. They specifically target people that, you know, that they're after, people that they want to specifically persecute. But then they'll also specifically target people who are maybe a bit more naive about the process or more naive about what their intentions are or people that have very little resources. So this happened a lot with the American Indian Movement where they picked what they thought of as, like, weaker individuals and made them testify. And so part of that, you've got to think that part of that scheme involves the scheduling. So yesterday, there were two women that were testified. I mean, that were subpoenaed to testify first yesterday. And one of them is like, I mean, she's like this older woman. It's kind of like the little old lady that runs the green store in Ocean Beach, but a store where you buy environmental products. And this other woman was like not involved, you know, with the movement at all. She worked on some like local vote count campaign around the mayoral election. And they were both subpoenaed to testify yesterday. I was subpoenaed to testify on the 28th, but my girlfriend is going through a medical procedure on the 28th, so I requested a continuance, and they denied my request for a continuance. Everybody actually asked for a continuance, an extension, and my lawyer, who's dealt a lot with grand jury witness cases, says that it's very common that they'll give you an extension. She totally expected for us to get an extension, but I guess she hasn't. Wasn't really expecting that the FBI was, you know, out to get us, so they've denied all requests for an extension. So I went in yesterday because it's very, very hard for me to be here on the 28th.
And how was that experience for you?
Well, I mean, frankly, you know, the experience was really shitty. I went in yesterday only in the hope that they might have some simple, innocuous questions that I could answer and then go and be able to be with my girlfriend on the day of her medical procedure. But it wasn't like that. It was exactly as I had expected. Right after asking me what my name was and where I lived, they started right off with the questions of, like, do you know this person? Do you know this person? Were you here on this day? You know, I responded by pleading the fifth, because who knows what crazy charges they're cooking up against people.
Mm-hmm.
But also, furthermore, by, you know, saying I object also on my First Amendment right to free association. It's none of your fucking business who I know or don't know.
And what is the Fifth Amendment?
The Fifth Amendment is your right to not testify, and to not say anything in court that could be used against you or incriminate you in any sort of criminal charge. And in grand jury cases, it's really kind of a nasty catch-22 situation, because the whole idea of a grand jury is to, like, force people to testify. They're, like, used as an investigative tool. So there are very few things that you say to not testify. Like me, I even only said that I objected based on the First Amendment, only just to get it on record and just to say it in front of the jury, hoping that some of them have some bit of humanity left, because, like, his precedent says that First Amendment doesn't fucking matter in a grand jury at all.
Right.
What matters is, you know, you can plead the fifth or nothing.
Right. And, you know, I hadn't thought of it before, but as you're talking about it, it does really, everything changes a bit in front of the grand jury. Rather than taking the fifth at trial, where there are specific criminal charges that have been brought and you're being asked to testify and maybe you might be implying to them, in this case, there aren't specific charges. Like, as far as I know, no one's been charged at this point, correct? They're just sort of doing this sort of broad scope investigation.
Yeah, that is part of what's so insidious and so wrong about the grand jury, is it's this air of secrecy. I mean, I guess I would have read the grand juries were originally intended to, like, allow whistleblowers to speak out against the government or something like that. So there's all these special rules. Like, you're not allowed to have a lawyer present. You can have if you have a lawyer that is representing you, you can have them wait outside the room, and you can say, I have to go talk to my lawyer on that question, and, you know, they may let you out, and they may not.
And
but that's right. They have not brought any charges against anyone. And furthermore, on these, like, special rules of grand juries, if you refuse to answer any of their questions, then they put you in jail, and you don't have a right to trial before a jury or anything. It's just you're not even charged with a crime. You're just put in jail as a coercive measure to get you to talk.
Mm-hmm. And so, were you concerned that they might put you in jail when you refused?
Yes, I was, definitely. And so the procedure with grand juries is you can plead the fifth, and then if you do that repeatedly, then they will take you before a judge, and the judge grants what's called immunity. And so immunity means that, so now once this judge grants you immunity, then that means that nothing you say can be used to prosecute you in this grand jury, and so you can no longer plead the Fifth. Now you just have the choice of answer the question or go to jail.
Yeah, interesting. Do you know what sort of immunity they gave you, whether it was qualified immunity or whether it was a broader immunity? Like, they can give you immunity where they can't prosecute you. Like, anything you say to them, they can't use that as the basis of a later prosecution against you. Or they can give you a type of immunity where they simply cannot prosecute you for the given charges. Of course, at this point, there are no given charges, so that's kind of
right.
Difficult.
Right. I'm not exactly sure which kind of immunity they have given me.
Because it's likely that what they set up is a way of saying, and this is general, not specific to your case at all, that they offer people a type of immunity whereby they say, okay, yeah, you know, now you have to talk because we're giving you immunity. And they can still use your words as the basis for their further investigations, and they find out more evidence about something. And then they come back and say, oh, well, we found out this evidence, and now we're charging, you know, you, person who spoke to us. And you say, but I got immunity. And they're like, right, we're not using your words.
Right, we're using somebody else's words.
We're using somebody else's words or something we found on the basis of your words, but that's different. So.
Right. And that's another thing. I've talked to some lawyers who've done a lot of activist grand juries around the School of the Americas, and they told me that another thing to really keep in mind is that even though the prosecution can say, oh, you're not a target, you're not a suspect, at any time your status can change from witness to suspect based on what somebody says in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they said that to me yesterday. I was pleading the Fifth, and they're like, well, are you aware that you're not a suspect? And, I mean, it doesn't mean anything to me that they would say that because my status could change at any time.
Has legal support cost you money?
Fortunately, at this point, it hasn't. I mean, you know, it's only been a couple days that we've been working on this issue. So at this point, I was able to find a lawyer through the National Lawyers Guild who is representing me. But it's my understanding that the other two women that testified yesterday weren't even able to find a lawyer.
Do you know how things went for them in front of the grand jury?
I didn't get a lot of chance to talk to them, and I don't know what they want to say publicly.
Can you talk about, like, some of your involvement in the community?
Sure. I mean, that's part of the message that we're trying to get out to the media, and because there's a defense committee that's sort of been set up here in San Diego. A lot of people came together to work on defending those people that have been subpoenaed and try to raise funds for them and try to, you know, do press conferences and rallies and raise public attention about how horrible this process is. One of the main things that they're trying to bring to light is that, like, the FBI is basically using this investigation as an excuse to go after everybody. I mean, of the 10 or 12 people subpoenaed, there are people doing all different kinds of work. I mean, like I said, it's people doing anti-war work, like myself, doing a lot of work around independent media, or around human rights for migrant people doing, some of the folks subpoenaed are in Veg San Diego, which is like a group that goes around town and does like vegan feed outs where they give out free ice cream. I mean, so they're basically, it looks to us like they're just trying to sort of map out the whole community and just get every bit of information they can to decide who to prosecute. I guess that's the claimed goal of the grand jury, is to figure out who to prosecute for some particular crime.
And
one other thing, I'm sorry, while I'm on that topic, another thing that the defense committee is really focusing on a lot is the sheer just incompetence of the San Diego FBI to be going after a bunch of innocent people that are just community organizers in, you know, some sort of complicated federal criminal case. I mean, it was only maybe 3 weeks ago or a month ago that the front page story on the Union Tribune, the big corporate local newspaper, was a San Diego FBI drops the ball on 9/11 hijackers. There was a big story about how the San Diego FBI didn't find the 9/11 hijackers that were living and training here in San Diego. And then 2 weeks later, they go visit somebody's house, ask them for names of who was at this Rod Corionto event. 1 week later, we get the subpoena. I mean, it seems like an obvious attempt on their part to try to look good or look busy or something.
To look like they're going after the bad guys, whatever group is sort of being demonized at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And which seems to tie in with some of the things we've heard from government officials recently, claiming that environmental activists were terrorists, that they were the number one threat we had to go, had to be investigating and going after. So it seems like this is part of that whole kind of PR campaign.
Yeah, I mean, and it's so absurd if you think about it for a minute. Like last week there was a story on Democracy Now! About how, why is the FBI focusing so much on environmental activism as terrorism when they're not looking at, like, white supremacist hate groups that, that actually do plenty of bombings and plenty of violent crime. And if you look at the activity of, like, the Minutemen right now, they're, like, popularizing this kind of, like, racist, anti-migrant dialogue, and it's, like, in the corporate media every day talking about illegals and, I mean, they're acting as, like, a lightning rod for, like, racism and all kinds of racist groups. Like, there's white supremacist groups in Fallbrook, which is here, just a few hours from here, at the border here in San Diego, that have, websites with plenty of, like, racist hate cartoons and hate speech. And, I mean, those people are not the number one threat. Like, environmentalists are. It's amazing.
So what kind of effect do you think this has had on the local activist community, people who are trying to, who are trying to work for a better world?
I mean, it's definitely clearly an attempt to make people scared and to, be divisive and separate people. And it's had a little bit of that effect. I mean, for sure, it's going to make people scared when they know that anybody who's in a room of activists, whether or not they're an informant or whether or not they're a friend of the government, like, they might be put in a situation in the very near future where they're in a room with the government and be saying either talk or go to jail. So, for sure that's got to instill a certain degree of fear in people. And also the people who have been subpoenaed and the people supporting them have definitely been sort of, taken aback and alarmed. And it definitely makes people act in, a little bit irrational ways when they're facing this kind of fear. But at the same time, it's been kind of a unifying effect, I think, because the folks that have come together to defend these people being subpoenaed, feel really strongly about how screwed up this process is. And so, in just a few days, they got a meeting together of a bunch of people and have lots of plans going. Like yesterday, when I went in to go before the grand jury, it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday with like 2 days of notice. And there were like 10 people outside with signs and, passing out flyers for a bigger rally next Tuesday. And so it's had a good and a bad effect.
Do you have any advice for other people that may be going through a grand jury process or may face this process in the future?
I guess like in a general sense, I think that what's really important is for folks to sort of step up and really, like, when they're involved in organizing, to not allow, like, a natural hierarchy to develop where there's, like, one or two or a few point people. Because it seems like a strength that I have here in this is that, I'm nobody special. I don't know anything. So, whatever I could say is hopefully not all that important. But it seems like it's like using our sort of non-hierarchical organizing techniques would make it harder for the FBI, the government, to like pick out people and really target them, which is probably why they subpoenaed so many people, because they just have no idea what's going on. And that's good. In a way, that's good for us, because then I'm in the same boat as the little old lady from the green store. I guess another thing to keep in mind is how important security culture is. Whether you're doing, a lockdown or whatever it is you're doing, I'm really happy that I don't know anything about, anything that went down around that time in 2003. And it's good. And that means that people had good security culture and weren't, like, just talking shit. I mean, I guess the other thing to do is just to, like, learn about the process. I mean, I heard about it because it just happened a few weeks ago in San Francisco, but I didn't know how awful it was until it, hit me.
Right. So it sounds to me like part of what the grand jury process can do is actually sort of cause fear and intimidation among the activist community. But it sounds more like down in your area, it's, if anything, it's bringing a number of you together. that you're actually being energized by this kind of attack against you all.
Yeah, in a certain way it is having that. I mean, it's having that effect. I mean, it's early, you know. Unfortunately, it can be a long process. Like, it could, if the grand jury that we're facing just got started, it could be going on for 18 months. And I know, I have a strong feeling that some of the folks that have been subpoenaed are planning on not complying at all, not pleading the fifth, but not even showing up, which I know some folks in San Francisco did too. So this sort of support effort could go on for a long time.
You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org, and we're speaking with Michael Cardenas, an activist and community organizer in San Diego who's just gone through and is continuing to go through a grand jury process. Michael, what resources are there for people to learn about the grand jury that you can recommend?
There's some really good resources online. The Just Law Collective has a website. I think it's justlaw.org. But if you go to San Diego Indie Media, you can read their website there. It has some good tips for dealing with grand juries. I read a good article also at nocompromise.org. And recently there was a website set up, which is FBIwitchhunt.org, which I think links to the No Compromise story. I mean, also the recent indie media coverage in San Francisco and having that audio of that teach-in really helped because, you know, there's obviously a lot of friendly WICIT lawyers in San Francisco, and they were there talking at that teach-in, and we played that here on Radioactive San Diego a couple times, and I learned a lot from that.
Just a quick update. You mentioned the Just Cause Law Collective. I'm taking a look at their site now. It's actually at lawcollective.org. They have a good section on grand juries.
Thanks.
As well as a number of other sections for people who are interested. Other issues about if you get arrested and questioned, if you're a minor, if you're not a citizen, you know, if you're in jail and bail, it's a good resource. It's a really good resource.
And one other good resource is the National Lawyers Guild. I know they have local chapters around the country, and a lot of us here were able to find pro bono representation thanks to the National Lawyers Guild. And that actually reminds me of one other piece of advice that I had, and that is that probably the worst thing that people could do when they get a grand jury subpoena as an activist is to just be scared and shut up. That's a reasonable response, right, when you're faced with, like, me going into a federal grand jury and faced with all these scary charges. And I'm sure that's what the FBI wants. But it was largely because I, like, immediately went to, like, my local indie media center and posted a story online and said, you know, oh, the feds just showed up at my house and gave me a subpoena. That, like, right after that, people were calling me and said, hey, I got subpoenaed too. And allowed us to sort of come together quickly because I was speaking up about it. I mean, it's important to talk to your lawyer about what you can say and not, but it's good to think publicity helps.
Wonderful. I'm wondering if there's anything else you'd like to add before we get out of here.
It's hard for me to believe that it's just a criminal investigation. It's a lot easier for me to believe that what they want to do is to smash activist movements all over the country, especially since this is happening at the same time all over the country. And it's just not going to work. I mean, all it does is make me more motivated to do the work that I'm doing.
Well, thank you. I'm really, really want to thank you for joining us today and talking to people, sort of helping to educate about the situation so people can be better informed, especially in case it happens to them.
Yeah, thanks very much. We've got stuff coming up, like a press conference and rallies and stuff in the next week, so check San Diego Indie Media.
That's sandiego.indiemedia.org?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, thanks for joining us today, Michael.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Once again, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. Thanks a lot.